Hello and welcome to Ahead of the Curve. This is your host, Jonathan Gellner, and thank you so much for joining us today. On today's show, we have on Anthony Gillich, head baseball coach at Central Arizona College. Anthony just finished his 10th season as the head coach and 17th overall at Central Arizona College. The Vaqueros finished 2023 as the conference champions for the third consecutive year, and a 47-12 record ranks the fourth best winning percentage all time in the history of the program. Anthony was also voted as the ACCAC Coach of the Year for the fourth time. In 2022, Central won the NJCAA National Championship over Cali 4-2 in the national title game. The national championship is the fourth in school history and the second under Anthony's leadership. Along the way, he earned the ACCAC Coach of the Year, West District Coach of the Year, the Walter Buss Bergman Coach of the World Series, and the ABCA National Coach of the Year. They finished with a 59-13 record, which was the most wins in school history. So on the show, we discuss how to get buy-in, what advice he would give to new head coaches, and why they make a big deal over the small stuff. You're going to love this episode with Anthony Gillich. Anthony, welcome to the show.
I appreciate you having me on. Thanks for highlighting junior college baseball in our program.
Of course. The JUCO bandit myself. So, I mean, I have to, right? This is the pinnacle of college baseball, I think.
Yeah, well, it's a different breed of person for sure. So, again, I appreciate you having me on.
Of course. So I, you know, getting to know you a little bit better and, you know, talking off the mic, I'm really excited to, you know, really dig into what Central has done. And you guys have been, you know, extremely successful, you know, since you mentioned you got there in 2008. And so it's going to be really fun to get to see what you guys are doing over there. But this time of year, you know, this is going to air in a couple of days. And, you know, this is, for me, it's a season of reflection of like, okay, what do we do well? What do we want to do different? What do we do better? All of the above, right? And what do we want to start doing, or, you know, depending on who we have. So when you, I'm assuming that you do that. And if you don't, you could give us kind of your system of getting ready for the fall. But what are you doing right now to really prepare yourself for when you get your players in a couple of months?
Yeah, I mean, multiple things, right? I mean, as far as the players go, we're working on body and development for sure. So we kind of put a plan together for our guys as they go into summer baseball or as they're incoming to our program, as far as the body care and strength that we want them to make and some goals. And they're part of those conversations too. So, you know, they share some ideas with us and things that they like and things that they don't like or need to get better at. And so we kind of try to build an individual plan for each person going into the summer, whether they're coming back or whether they're just coming in for the first time as incoming freshmen. And then on top of that, a development plan as well. So whether it's, you know, hey, we need some mound time for you. Let's get you on the mound and compete and get a bunch of innings, or hey, let's lay off the innings and let's train and do those kind of things. So we try to, you know, we don't have like a blanket statement for each person. We try to individualize it and make it a little bit more personal. And so, you know, myself and the coaching staff will put our heads together and then we'll get together with that player and then we tweak it both ways. You know, we like I said, they're a big part of their own development. So, you know, we want to hear from them. And so kind of from a player's perspective, you know, those are some of the things that we're looking at. From a program perspective, obviously recruiting is big right now. And so, you know, at junior college, you're losing at a minimum half your team every year. And potentially more. You know, you might lose some freshmen to the draft or to Division I's or those kind of things. And so you lose a potential or a minimum, sorry, of half your team every year. So you got to replace that through, you know, the incoming freshmen, but then also guys that are transferring and those kind of things. And so, those are some of the main focuses for our program right now. You know, it's, like I said, development, body care for the players, and then it's kind of recruiting for the program.
Oh, I love that. And you know, you're really focusing on the weight room, but you also mentioned that you let the players really take the reins on a lot of that stuff. What are some different things that the players have really gravitated towards, and some different things that the players have really have been like, ah, that may not be my favorite thing. Is there anything that stands out?
Yeah. I mean, especially with all the training now, I mean, like, you know, I started at Central in 2008 and the, you know, baseball and the way you train is like, I mean, completely different now, you know, back then it was kind of like, hey, you know, like let's, you know, throw some long toss and stretch and let's roll, you know, let's try to beat somebody. And so it's just, there's been so many advancements in training. And so, the players are smart now. I mean, they're smart as far as they've been taught their own training through maybe their own personal trainers, or they've been to different PT programs or athletic training programs, and they're smart, and so that they have a voice, and we want to listen to it. I mean, there's so much information out there with the, you know, with social media and the internet and then just smart people that people are surrounded by, and so I mean they have opinions on their own how they want to grow in certain areas and things that have helped them, and we're not a big believer, or I'm not a big believer in like trying to steer people only the way I want it to go. Like, I mean, I think that when you get the best out of people in any leadership position, when they have a voice. And now, you know, as a leader, you need to make some decisions and, hey, this is the route we're taking. Right. But, you know, I think as you give coaching staff a voice, as you give your players a voice, I think the product ends up better on the other side.
No doubt. And, you know, let's jump right into that. You know, one of the things that Joe mentioned to, you know, your assistant, who congratulations to him on the new job at Washington State, but he mentioned that you go over a 4 F's of buy-in. I would love to hear more about that. And can you teach us a little bit about it?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think, like, you know, culture is such a big buzzword right now, and it's important, you know, especially, I mean, really in any leadership, any program, business, you know, baseball program, classroom, wherever it is. I mean, to have a good culture is paramount, really. You know, if you don't, then you're relying on luck. Like, you're relying just on talent. Like, hey, we better have more talent in their team because our culture stinks or whatever, you know, so we better just be flat out better than somebody. But so we talk a little bit about the, how do you create culture? What does it actually look like? And so we kind of chiseled it down to, well, really what we want is buy-in, right? We want our players and our coaches and our administrative staff and to believe in the same things that we believe in. So we want some buy-in. And so, okay, so how do we get buy-in? And so we came up with the 4 F's of buy-in, and they're kind of just 4 examples of the way people get buy-in, and all of them are used, and you know, I kind of rank them out on how, you know, I from worst to best. And so, you know, the first F of buy-in is fear, and you know, fear is basically, you have a bad culture if your organization and your buy-in and your culture is based on fear, you have a bad culture, and because you're going to get minimum results. I mean, if I'm in a culture that is based on fear, I'm only doing the minimum so I don't get reprimanded or I don't pay some consequence, and I just don't think you get the best out of people. Now, I do believe that you need to have accountability and those kind of things, so, and rules you know, some discipline for sure. So, you know, don't get that confused. But if your culture is just based on fear and punishment, and if you don't do that, then this happens, you're not going to get the best out of people. So that's number one. Number two is failure. And failure is kind of a reluctant culture. It's better than the first, but it kind of keeps people at an arm's length. You know, it comes from both sides. It comes from the player side and the coaching side. The player side is like, hey, coach, you know, I'm not going to do it that way. I'm going to do it my way first until I fail, and then I'll try it your way. Like, I've always been really good at bunting, and so I'm going to do it my way. And then if I stink at it, then we'll do it your way. And there's some benefits to that for sure. A lot of young coaches have a failure approach culture, and it's because maybe they're not quite confident enough in their own beliefs yet. And so they say, hey, why don't you try it your way first? If it doesn't work, then I'll try to figure out a way for you to do it. And so I certainly fell into that when I was starting out as a coach, like, hey, I'm not exactly sure what my beliefs are. And so how about you just do it the way you've always done it? And then, we'll adjust from there. And so I also think that, you know, going back to what we talked about before, that kind of gives people a voice. And so we have a phrase here that is called disagree and commit. And what that means is I want guys, strong-minded enough, prepared enough, smart enough to disagree with the decisions that I make as the leader. But I also want them to be loyal enough, humble enough to commit to the decisions that's made. So what that means is, like, if we're in a room and we're talking about players' development, or we're talking about the practice plan of the coaches, I want the coaches to be able to stand up and have a culture where they say, hey, you know, Gilly, I think we could do it this way better, and they're prepared and they're smart and they've researched the drill they want to do, and hey, this is why we're going to get something out of it. But they're loyal enough to commit to whatever decision is made. Okay, we heard you out. We made a decision. This is the route we're going. And then everybody jumps on board. And so that's a big part of our culture, disagree and commit. The third F in there is follow. And that's kind of my best way to describe that one would be like the Patriot way. Right. You know, you just walk into an organization. Wow. They've been dominating for years. You look around. It's a great environment. I don't really understand it quite yet, but I'm just going to jump on board because it's always had success, always delivered results. And so, you know, I'm going to jump right in. You look around and you're like, man, these guys, and it doesn't mean they always have to win or those kind of things, but man, I love the way these guys work, or I love the way they're prepared, or I love the way they communicate. Like, I'm on board with that. And so, that's follow. So there's fear, failure, follow. And then the last one is faith. And faith is, not necessarily in a religious text sense, but like more of in a trust. And so, you know, if you get to that point where there's faith in your organization and people believe in each other, and hey, I don't understand quite why, you know, Gilly is asking me to do my base running this way or my catching that way, but you know what, I believe in Gilly, so I'm gonna do it, right? I'm gonna try it. I'm gonna give him some honest feedback and those kind of things. It just opens up lines of communication. So yeah, those are the four F's of buy-in that we talk about. Fear, you got a bad culture. Failure, you got a reluctant culture. Follow, you got a good culture. And faith, you got a championship culture. And I think that's what we're all striving for. And that one, the last one, takes a little bit of time to earn that.
Sure. Does it go in that order usually? Like, so let's say you're getting freshmen in, you know, in August or September, does it usually follow like that order of you have to go each of those steps to get to where you want to go?
I think 1, 2, and 3 are all where you potentially can start. And then the faith, the last one, is something that's earned, and that takes a little bit of time. But like, your own personality will allow you to start with, hey, I'm going to, you know, start it with fear or failure or follow. Like, if you already have a good culture in place, then they might walk in the door and it's just, like I said, they walk in and they're like, man, I don't know exactly what's going on, but the sophomores or the seniors or whatever type of program you have, I love the way they work. I'm going to jump right on board and do it how they're doing it. But the fear, failure, and fall, I think, is the starting point. 1, 2, and 3 are the starting point, and then you're trying to get to that faith. Now, out of the 1, 2, and 3, I would rank them that way, like fear being the worst, failure second, and then follow third, mm-hmm. As far as the best one goes. And then that leads into the faith if you can get there.
Understand that. So with that, you know, you took over the job. It's, you know, been a little while, but let's, you know, we've got a lot of coaches that are listening who are either transitioning to new jobs or getting their first head coaching job this time of year. So I want to know, you know, looking back, what were some things, you know, you did and to really set yourself up for success? And you were the assistant there, which really helped. You had, you know, an idea of the program and the players. But what were some things that you felt like led to your success? And then if you could go back, what were some things that you might do differently?
Well, I know the piece of advice that I kind of try to give new, at least head coaches is, I mean, I thought I was prepared. I was like, man, I'm going to rock this thing, right? Like I'm going to get after this thing. I've been an assistant here for 7 years. I've tried to take on as much responsibility as I can, take as much off the head coach's plate, just so I can learn it, you know, as far as scheduling and ordering equipment and practice planning and, you know, the whole deal. And I thought I was so prepared and it was a huge reality check, you know, when you go one seat down, you know, and now nothing moves unless you move it, right? And so, and I think the two things that I wasn't quite prepared for that I try to impart kind of on other coaches and my own coaches when they get head coaching jobs and those kind of things is one, just it becomes a lot more about the administrative side when you become a head coach, right? Unfortunately, like it'd be cool if you just were on the field at all times, but it just, you know, you got to be good and organized with the paperwork and the eligibility and scholarships and budgets and those kind of things. And so, unfortunately, it becomes a little bit more about that. I mean, all the coaches, we like to be on the field, but that was one thing that I wasn't quite prepared for, how much of that would take up my time. And then the biggest one was that I was not, and I hadn't even considered was coaching the coaches. And you know, I just assumed that, like, you know, everybody was going to do what they're supposed to do. And they didn't. And that was my fault, because I didn't give them any direction. You know, and I thought about the players and how I'm going to, you know, organize the players and get them moving. And I didn't give really any of the coaches any ownership. I didn't give them direction. I didn't paint the vision for them. And that was a big flaw of mine in year one. And I think we could have been a lot better had I been prepared for that. And so going into my second year, that was a big focus of mine to, like, you know, it just like hit me right in the face that, like, man, I didn't do a very good job of that, you know, to start out. And so, you know, cause I don't know, I mean, you know, some of those guys they were your peer, you know, as far as, or they were, you're both assistant coaches the year before, and now you're the head coach and they're assistant. And so it, like, you know, the relationship changes and a little bit you know, and so that was a tricky part for me and something that, you know, I had to learn the hard way in year one.
I get that completely. And, you know, it's tough to really do that. And then, you know, you feel like, I'm sure the longer you've done it, the more comfortable you do with, you feel with doing things like that. And, you know, we all want to be coached, and that's why you're on here today. I'm trying to learn from you, and you're trying to grow yourself too. So it's not like, you know, we're above coaching too. So I think that's a big thing too. And leadership is a little lonely. I think I've noticed that too. You're like, okay, like now everything starts and stops, you know, at the top of the head of the organization, whatever organization that is. And you're like, okay, like this is definitely much, much different. So I just went through that experience for the first time. And so I completely get with what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's tricky. Like I said, it's just a, you know, it's you're on an island at some points, you know, but I mean, that's part of being a leader, right? You got to be, and I think that's why young coaches have a tough time doing that, just because, you know, that they haven't found their voice yet, or they haven't found what's important to them yet, or they haven't, you know, failed enough to, like, you know, shape their own personality or belief system or standards and those kind of things, and then be strong enough to implement them. And so, yeah, so it's definitely tricky. I mean, it's a work in progress. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm trying to learn and get better every day for sure. I mean, I got a long way to go as well.
Don't we all? So with your fall coming up, and just talk to us a little bit about, you know, how you're shaping that. What are you going to do, you know, the first week that you get your players back, and then just kind of work us through the progression that you use and you could be outside really all winter long, because the best weather is probably December, January, February. And just kind of walk us through, you know, what your progression is from when you start with those guys. You know, do you do anything the first week that you feel like, you know, sets the tone, or, and then we'll just kind of walk through from there.
Yeah. I mean, as far as our fall goes, in junior college, it's an interesting blend, right? Because, our fall is about three things, right? It's about development, which trumps everything else in our program. It just does, right? Like we want to try to get better every day, like everybody else. And you know, if we do that by the end of the year, man, we're going to be rolling pretty good. And so, it's one part development. in the fall, it's one part identity. Like we have a whole new team every year. And so, you know, it's not like at the 4-year level where, you know, hey, we have 7 new players or 8 new players or something. Like we're going to have, you know, 20 plus new players. And so, you know, we got to try to find out, a little bit of our identity. And I think, you know, going back to like culture and team identity, I think like, you know, a good leader has to be willing to adjust to the personnel they have. So maybe I'm a big believer in the running game and speed and those kind of things, but we're not quite built that way that year. And, you know, you have to adjust to try to bring out the best attributes of your own team. And so, so we're trying to, it's development, identity. And then we have this other piece that we need to consider is the showcase portion of our own team. So like in junior college, most of our guys are getting recruited in the fall. And so, you know, like you have to train, we're trying to build identity, but you also want them to like be ready to go for when the 4-year school or the scouts come out and stuff like that. So it's different, you know, at the 4-year level, cause you can, it's just development. And ours is development, learning identity as we go. And then, oh yeah, hey, like on Friday, we got this big event they need to be ready for. And so, makes it a little bit tricky. So that's kind of how our fall goes. But as far as just our team and things that we work on, we try to highlight the best we can the small stuff, right? And so I guess a better way to put that is like everybody gets jacked to hit BP. Everybody gets jacked to throw their bullpens and take ground balls and those kind of things. So we make a big deal about the other stuff. And so the base running, like the coaches try to get jacked on that. So then the players, it rubs off on the players or the team defense type stuff. And so like we make a big deal about those kind of things because those things win you games. You know, we talk about winning the tie here. And so what that would mean is you know, when you look at a scoreboard at the end of the game and or a stat sheet and, you know, both teams have, you know, 9 hits, both teams made 1 error, both teams walked 2, both teams struck out 7, both teams left 7 on base, but the score is 5-4. Like somebody won that game, you know, why does that happen? And so, you know, so we talk about that. We want to be that team and some of those little decisions that we make on where we're throwing to the base, how we back up, how we run the bases, not making unnecessary outs, like those kind of things, like they add up, like they're not equal to a run, but like 10 of them might be. And so, so we talk about that, talk about winning the tie. So we put like a high precedent on just the little things, I guess. I mean, which is a little cliche, but I guess we use a different term for it, win the tie.
No, I really like that. That's really good. And, you know, coming into, you know, college, I'm sure, you know, and being, you know, being at the level that you're at too, it's you're getting some very elite baseball players. Do you get any pushback with the little things? And, you know, it's, they do this all the way up, like having firsthand experience on seeing, you know, what people do all the way, you know, at every level, all of this stuff really matters and all of this stuff is practiced, but you know, you get high school kids and they're like, oh, this is, you know, little league stuff, or, you know, you get college kids and I'm sure they're like, oh, this is high school stuff. You get any pushback with any of that stuff?
Not typically. I mean, I think we do a good job of one, I think the culture's in place. Everybody thinks it's important, but two, we do, you know, we kind of do our homework on the front end in the recruiting process. So we want guys that those things are important to them. So, so for us, like, yeah, I mean, we take it a little bit slower on the front end of recruiting to make sure we get it right on the back end. And so,
gotcha.
So we try to kind of vet those guys and learn about them and see what they're all about, opposed to just recruiting their talent, you know, which is important too, obviously. But so typically not much. But again, like I said before, we want them to have a voice, and if they have a way they like to do it or a way they've been successful doing it, then we want to hear about it because, you know, like I said, we're open minded to learning as well. Where our egos aren't so big that, like, you know, it's our way is the only way to do it. So, sure. Yeah, we certainly listen to our players, and but yeah, as far as like serious pushback, like, nah, not too much.
Good. So with that, you know, we talk about building culture, and you know, it's it's easy to, you know, put a quote on a practice plan or, you know, make some really cool posters to put in the locker room, graphics, whatever. Yeah. But how do you consistently build like and embed that culture into your, you know, daily habits, into your program, to where, you know, they're not just words on a wall, but it's things that they're actually living out?
Yeah, well, I think you said it. I think it's consistency. I think it's showing up every day and showing them what you're about, right? I mean, if you're asking them to work and then, you know, you're not working, I mean, it makes it tough to have some buy-in there, right? And so, so for us, I mean, our coaching staff, we try to get out there and work and kind of be in the trenches and be all about the players in the program. And that's what I'm so happy about with my coaching staff. Our staff is like, you know, they're all about the players, all about the program. And so that, I mean, the players, it's tough for them not to be about the same things. And so, you know, so for us, I mean, consistency is a huge one. And then communication too. I mean, we want open lines of communication. And I think, you know, I've been in programs and I've been in organizations and been to organizations where it's like, you know, you're fearful to talk to the person above you you know, the boss or your boss's boss or, you know, whatever it is, or just admit that like you're struggling at something. And so we try to break down those walls and open up the lines of communication so that like we can just get to the root of problems and fix them or kind of like, you know, water the good stuff, right? Like, hey, let's keep having, you're doing great at this. Like, let's continue to build that and grow that. And so
I love that. And, you know, one of the things that you've mentioned up, you know, quite a few times actually is communication and your communication with your players. I want to do a much better job of communicating roles and, you know, different ways that, you know, players can get better. Maybe not necessarily like sit down, let's talk about for 30 minutes in a formal setting, more than a couple times a year, but just making sure that, you know, it's crystal clear what the player needs to work on, how they can get better and their role. And, you know, what are some different ways that you found to really communicate those type of things? Because the last thing I want is for our players to see the lineup posted on day one and them just be completely shocked, you know, and that's never fun. And there's always things that are that, you know, you'll be in and out of the lineup at times, and there's different things that you do and you try to communicate those things. But what are some, let's say you go through the fall, you have sat down, this is right before they leave for Christmas break, winter break. Or maybe when they get back, how do you conduct those type of preseason meetings?
Yeah, we honesty, really. I mean, we just shoot them straight. There's no sense in sugarcoating anything or those kind of things. I mean, we try to be as honest as we can and then give them a plan on how to execute what their goals are. So like, hey, you know, right now you're in a role where you're behind the other shortstop, right? And these are the reasons why. But hey, if we continue to work on, you know, X, Y, Z, then you know, we can get there. And then as coaches, we need to continue to work on X, Y, Z. So they have some, you know, belief in you that like you haven't given up on them and those kind of things. And hey, when your moment is called, you're going to be ready. And so we have an open policy to come in and ask questions. And, you know, if you ask questions, be ready for the answer, right? And it's nothing personal. It's nothing that I don't care about you. It's just, hey, this is where you stand right now. And, you know, and I tip my hand every game, right? Like the nine guys in the lineup are the guys who I think give us the best chance to win that day. And tomorrow might be a little bit different. And I try to communicate that with the guys and they're certainly open to ask questions as well. And so, yeah, I mean, there's no better way than just being honest with them. And if you spend enough time in practice watching and talking amongst the coaching staff, as far as what they see, and, you know, it paints a pretty good picture of, you know, what players can do. And then you just, as a coach, you try to put them in the best places to be successful for themselves and for the program. And so there's no better thing than just being straightforward and honest with them and then helping them out on the areas they need to improve.
Sure. Can you give us an example of, let's say you did have a backup shortstop who ended up being like a guy for you? And we all have those. This probably happens every year, but give us an example of, you know, a guy that wasn't where they wanted to be in January and they, you know, you had a conversation and they took that to heart and they, you know, they continued to work. And how did you, I don't say maneuver that situation, but I can't think of a better term. But how did you navigate, maybe a better one? How did you navigate that situation to where that led to them being, you know, successful in the end?
Yeah, I mean, one player that comes to mind is Jalen Ray. He was a player. It wasn't so much from the fall to the spring; it was more from season to season. And so, for him, he's an Australian kid. Came over in the 21 season, and so right on the heels of COVID, he wasn't allowed to travel in that fall. He's on the Australian national team. He's a big star. He led their team in hitting. He's had a lot of success, and he came over in our spring. And he really struggled, and it was hard on him because it was the first time in his life he had struggled and whatnot. And so for us, like, we just thought so much of him. We liked the way he worked. We loved his personality. We loved just the way he was prepared. And so the way we tried to counteract that and try to squash his own disappointment in himself was try to put him in positions to be successful and then make a big deal about those successes. So pinch running and he scored a run, or defensive replacement and in spots and make a big deal about those. So he felt some level of success and importance and those things. And it really helped him. And I mean, I think, he was on a tipping point of, am I good enough? And there's some doubt there and those kind of things. And for him, it really helped him, and he went off and did great. And, I think he led the West Coast League in hitting. He went off to, the following year we won a national championship, and he was, a huge piece in it. And went off to Division I last year and did great. And so, yeah, for us, like, it was just important that we identified that there was a little bit of a little worrisome for him. And so we tried to just celebrate those successes, and it certainly didn't start out how he wanted it. So we tried to, we didn't want to give up on him and didn't want him to give up on himself, probably more importantly. And so,
sure.
Tried to celebrate those small victories that he was having, that small victory in the preparation he was having. And then on the small on the field success, make him into big deals, because they really were. And then they helped guide him to the next year where he was, a star.
Right. And he, he went through that, but much better because of it.
I think so. I don't know if he would tell you that, I'm sure he didn't want to go through that, sure. I think big picture. Yeah. He probably looks back, and that probably made him a little bit stronger and better player. Mm-hmm. Probably.
I really like that. So with the, we're getting into, preseason, how do you feel like you get your team ready? So let's say, once you get back from break, it's just a short couple of weeks, and then you're on the road traveling. You guys are playing games most days. So how do you feel like, what do you do in that sprint between you get back from break and then your first game? What do you do to really get your team prepared and feel like you're ready to go?
Yeah, well, you need to be it's a scary part over the break, because like, you work so hard in the fall, and then you go into the spring, and you have this like month break off that, like, you give your guys the workout plan and the throwing plan, but they got to have some ownership on their part to make sure that's getting done. And we check in with our guys and make sure that they're getting it done and have some accountability. But as far as the practices, I'm a big believer in being really organized, really efficient, and doing some things with energy. And so I just think you can get a lot of things done when you work that way. And so, I try to have the practice plan as detailed as possible. I try to be as efficient as possible. We don't do a lot of things longer than like 15 minutes in our program. And that's by design too. So, we'll do a drill set for 15 minutes or so and move on to the next thing. And if we screwed it up, then we may come back to it at the end of practice. But like, it's just like in a game. I mean, you're not going to, I just don't see the value in like running a bunt defense 1,000 times until you get it right. Like, we're going to do it for the 15 minutes we have designed. It was pretty apparent we weren't very good at it, or that wasn't up to our standards. We're going to move on. We're going to hit a natural reset, just like we would in baseball with an end of an inning or end of a play. And then, hey, that was terrible. So we're going to come back at the end of practice and do it again. And so those are some of the ways that we design our practice, to try to be as efficient, as organized, and then keep the energy up too. You know, I mean, all of us have been in practice where one guy's hitting and 30 guys are shagging, and you know, the left fielder is throwing rocks at the right fielder, and you know, everybody's bored, right? And so we try to keep things moving and as many things going on, but not for just eyewash, for just to prepare. And so we spend a lot of time as a coaching staff talking about, you know, the things that are important to us and how can we get the best out of our players. And part of it is being organized in our practice plan.
Sure. Well, and what changes once you get into the season? You know, like I said, you guys are going full bore and you can practice every day of the week until you get to the season, and then you're playing games most days. So what changes whenever you do get to the season?
Yeah, a couple of things. We try to do a little bit of preparation for the team we are playing. So, you know, so our practice plans might be designed around controlling the running game or handling bunts or a certain type of pitcher or those kind of things. So, you know, we try to prepare that week for that. And then as the season goes, then part of our practice plan really includes body management. And so, you know, I mean, we have a 56 game season plus playoffs. Here in Arizona, it gets, you know, it gets hot as hell, right? And so, you know, so our guys, we try to keep them as fresh as we can as we go. So that's a big part of what we're doing, how we're going to do it, how hard we're going to do it as the season goes. That's a, like I said, I think as a, when I first started coaching, I thought, hey, you know, like it was a little bit more barbaric, right? Like, hey, we're just going to like outwork everybody. And like, we're JUCO guys and we're going to be tough and, you know, those kind of things. And the you know, as I learned, like, you know, you got to learn when to lay off some of the guys, and you can get just as much work done, but maybe you're doing it more on the mental side, you know, it later in the season and in review and teaching in these different ways. So it's not so much just wear and tear on their body. And so that's one thing that we kind of flip as the season goes a little bit, kind of right around spring break for us. Like, you know, it goes a little bit less physical, a little bit more mental. You know, that, like I said, that's a little bit by design just to help keep our guys fresh.
I love that, especially with catchers, because you're a catching guy. And yeah. So how do you keep them fresh during the season where they're not catching bullpens, literally like catching and then catching bullpens? And what are some different ways that you've helped them to keep their legs fresh?
Yeah, body care. We lay off, we're lucky for us. They don't have to run the bases for us. So like, you know, we're allowed to have courtesy runners in our league. And so, so that's one big way. Like, you know, we lay off the base running for them, you know, and we do a lot of body care with them. So like hip mobility and you know, different kind of stretching and those kind of things just to help those guys stay fresh. They get in the training room probably more than anyone, just as a preventative measure, some, you know, just on a prehab type thing, is whether it's ice baths and those kind of things just to make sure. I mean, you can't, you know, one thing I've learned over the years, you can't fake catcher. Right. And so, you know, any other position on the field, you can probably insert somebody for a game or two or even a week, but catcher, you know, you're screwed if you don't have a catcher. So you got to keep those guys healthy. But I mean, as far as the bullpens and those things, we like our guys catching bullpens. I mean, I think that's their best training tool other than the, you know, other than being in game. So we like getting them off the machine. But we certainly like them catching the bullpens and you know, their drill work is kind of like their T work, and their, machine is kind of like soft toss, and their bullpens are kind of like BP, right? If you're comparing it to a hitter. And so, and then, their games are like the game. So we like our guys to catch pens and those kind of things. But yeah, I mean, we have to do a little bit of load management. So the running and those kind of things, we lay off the catchers probably more than anybody.
Sure. No, it makes sense. So with that, you know, let's get into, you know, preparing for postseason. You know, you've been very successful winning, you know, two in the JCAA national championships and getting your guys ready. You know, you've got several conference championships. And how do you prepare those guys to be ready for those moments? And, you know, it's there's a lot of different philosophies, and I would love to hear yours.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's a lot of different ways to win, for sure. And every team's a little bit different, but Like I said, I mean, just to piggyback on what I talked about just a minute ago, is one of the biggest ways is our body management. So I won't go too much into that just because we just talked about it, but body management is a key, I think, you know, late in the year and making sure you're getting your work done and your reps, but not overdoing it where our guys are sore and breaking down. I don't think anyone's 100% quite at the end of a season, especially, you know, after you play 56 plus the Plash, you might be in game 70 or something and played 20 plus games in the fall or whatever. So, I mean, you're pretty deep into a season. And so, one thing that we do that we try to prepare, and it's, you know, something that we talk about game seven, all year long. So, you know, nobody has to explain what game seven is, right? Like, I mean, game seven, it's all on the line and it's an elimination game and those kind of things. So we try to treat every practice and every game that we play like it's game seven. And so, and we talk about that. And if you're, you know, willing to, run hard, slide hard, tag hard, you know, lay out head first into a dugout to make a catch in game seven of the national championship or whatever, then we should be willing to do that in our fall game or in our, opener or in the non-conference game that, you know, everybody on the outside says it isn't very important and those kind of things. Well, to us, it's game seven. And you know, we're going to try to win those games and we're going to try to kick your ass. Right. And so like those things are important to us. And so that when we actually do get into a game seven, there's some consistency there. There's not a level of panic. We've been preparing for this moment all year. You know what? We've already played 56 game sevens. And so, so for us, it's, usually when we get into those moments, it's the same level of, I don't want to say pressure, but like same level of importance for us. Just because we're playing in the national championship, it should be no different than the fall game that we played, you know, against Mesa Community College or whatever. And so, you know, we try to keep it consistent. And that's something that we talk about all year, game seven. You hear us talk about that all the time. It's game seven. It's game seven. And we put it on a lot of things as reminders. And so that helps us as we get ready for the postseason. Cause I think a lot of people, you know, in the postseason try to act differently than they do all year, right? They coach different, they play different, they feel pressure different. They, you know, and for us, we try to keep it as consistent as we can. And we talk about winning the week, and that helps us for the postseason too. If in our conference, if we win the week, we have four games a week. If we win the week, even if we went 3-1, we lost a game, but we ended up winning the week, you know what happens in the playoffs? We advance. And so that's something that we talk about all year as well, just winning the week. And if we do that, we're preparing in September, October, January, March, all those different months for May. And when we're in our playoffs, or in June when we're in our playoffs. And so, you know, if we, like I said, we can, that's one of our best ways we can do it is just the level of importance and how quick it can go. And so, yeah, we talk about those two things a lot, trying to win the week. And that takes a little pressure off a loss too. Like, hey, if we felt like we lost a game, we shouldn't have lost. Well, we still have a chance to win the week. And so, that's something that we can go back to. And then, and then game seven, like I said, it's just, I don't know. It's kind of part of our culture.
Sure.
Kind of
no, I like it.
Yeah, like it's on. It's game seven. Let's go.
No, that's great. So with that, you know, I would love to. I actually skipped over a question, but when you get to the season, what are some different ways that you felt like, or any like drill sets, or you know, things that you really feel like you guys do well, or you know, let's say if you were going to give a presentation over practice planning, you got to video something. That you guys do that you're like, hey, I think, you know, most coaches can take this away and use this tomorrow. What would that be?
Yeah, we have there's one drill that probably comes to mind that I mean, there's a lot of drills that we like and believe in, but we put a high precedent on handling the ball and just, you know, throwing the ball straight. Right. And so the guys that they always tease me because, you know, I say the phrase handle the ball like 1,000 times a season, right. You know, handle the ball. Mm-hmm. So, and so it's just important for us. So, we do a drill called Whip It. And so what Whip It is it's just a defense out there and, you know, a coach fungoing balls. And so we always imagine there's a guy on second base just for the rotation of the drill. So, you know, we hit a ball to the outfield and there's a runner on second. So the ball's coming to the plate. And, so we got to handle the ball as they're throwing it in, and they're throwing it into the, you know, the cut guy, whether it's the first baseman or the third baseman, depending on what direction we hit the ball. And at that point, the ball has to touch every base with a tag. And so, so, you know, as the ball's coming in, the catcher can relay it to the plate. He can say cut two, he can say cut three, and that starts it. And so whenever, so it's, let's say on this scenario, he says, you know, whatever, relay. And so it comes to the plate, catcher gets it, makes a tag. Now he has the option to go to third, second, or first to throw the ball next. And so, so he can make that tag and back pick a guy at first base. And so, so first the guy covering first base gets it, makes the tag, and now he can go to second or to third. And so, he throws it across the diamond because there's going to be a play at third. That third baseman catches it, makes the tag, right? And now the only place that he has left to go is second base. That's the only place that hasn't been touched yet. The pitchers in this portion, they all yell two, whatever the last base is, because they're locked in, mm-hmm. and they know where the ball's going as well. So everybody's yelling two on the last one. We throw it there and we make the tag, and that's one round. And so we try to hit all our outfielders with that. So maybe we have, you know, two at each spot. So we'll go around maybe, you know, do this six different times. And it's just playing catch with some energy, and our guys, you know, we call it whip it. The guys are, you know, whipping it around and, you know, throwing from a little different arm angles and you got to make a tag with it. And then an exchange and another throw and a decision on which base to throw it to. And like I said, there's no wrong base other than if it's already been there. So if it hasn't been there, you can throw at any base you want. You can throw to a lead base, a back base, anything like that. And so, for us, I always tell the guys, it's a little bit of a separator for us. Like the better we're doing whip it, the better we're playing. And we do sure. whip it pretty often. And so, like, you know, the better we're handling the ball and those kind of things. So we do whip it. I don't know. Like at the beginning of the year, we do it pretty often. At the end of the year, we might do it once a week. And so the better we're doing that is just it's a predictor and of our season. You know, it's like, man, we're playing pretty good right now. We're doing this drill pretty good. And when we're sloppy and throwing it around and it takes, you know, 12 different balls to even get through it, cause all of them are on the fence or something, we can't handle the ball. Then, you know, we're obviously playing pretty sloppy and probably opening the door to get beat a couple times.
No, I'm with you. So I've got a couple quick hitters before we go. And, you know, let me first off by saying thank you so much for, you know, coming on and letting me grill you for a little while. But the first one I've got for you is, you know, what is something that you have recently dug into, or what's something that has made you a better coach lately?
Yeah, I think, you know, every off season, and I wish I would have done this earlier, but every off season I try to audit myself, right? Of like, hey, what do I need to do to get better? Like kind of we talked about earlier about, you know, coaching the coaches and those kind of things. And so I wish I'd have done that from even when I was an assistant coach. I just started when I was a head coach, but I think I'd have been better for it. But so every year I try to audit myself. And so recently, you know, the thing that I've really been diving into and is bullpen management. And so, I think as a head coach, I think that's where I can, like infect the game the most and impact the game the most, more so than like, you know, calling a slider or a curveball or a fastball or, you know, bunt or hit and run. I just think like those decisions on like how guys get prepared from, you know, the time they're sitting in the dugout in the fourth inning to getting ready to go and then actually being inserted in the game in the seventh inning or you know, whatever it is and how that works and those decisions, whether to leave the starter in or not. I found that those are the biggest decisions that impact the game for me. And so I've tried to do a lot better job on that. And so, you know, I've called a lot of people and a lot of people I trust and have these conversations like you and I are having on just those certain topics. And so I try to pick out a topic a year that I really want to dive into. And I try to only pick one so that I can like fully immerse myself in it, opposed to like, hey, I want to learn about these 10 different things. And then it kind of gets watered down. And so, I've never done one twice, but I've done bullpen management twice. That's the only one. And so, and just, you know, finding out the routine and the, you know, and you hear all these different ideas from these great coaches and great minds and, you know, these people you trust. And then you kind of formulate your own idea and how it works for you and chew up the meat and spit out the bones, so to speak. You know, make your own, I don't know, philosophy on bullpen management. And so it's really helped me, in different areas, you know, as I go, just to, you know, be a learner, be a lifelong learner, right? And ask different people. And, you know, sometimes it's, you know, it's professional guys. Sometimes it's high school coaches. Sometimes it's, you know, you just watch games and say, man, they do a really good job at X, Y, or whatever it is. And so, like, it doesn't matter that, you know, they're a club coach or a professional coach or whatever, they're just good at what they do. And so, you know, there's a lot of smart people out there. So yeah, so I try to reach out to some people that have impressed me along the way. I try to take notes on those people, as, you know, as I meet them or see them or watch them in their arena or whatever, and in their area. And then when I kind of dig in, I try to, you know, do what you're doing and just kind of dig in on some people see what comes out.
I love that. So what advice would you give to us, or some different things that have really stood out to you that have helped?
As far as bullpen management or as far as
whatever?
Say that again?
Yes.
Bullpen management. So for us, like we have different levels of getting ready. Right. And so we have a 1, 2, and a 3, which, you know, a 1 is anything non-throwing. So those guys, some guys, and it can be different for each guy. Some guys like to roll out. Some guys like to do their band. Some guys like to stretch. Some guys like to jog and get loose. So anything that's non-throwing, they're getting their body going, and it's earlier in the game. I'll send them down. I'll say, hey, get to a 1, and that's what it is. And a 1 is different for each guy. And sometimes their 1 changes depending on how their body feels. And those kind of things. And so that's a 1. When I ask them to get to a 2, as I'm starting to think about them, it's catch play. Them and the catchers are playing catch in the bullpen. But they're not throwing with intent off the mound. So they're just getting loose. And I try to get each guy, like, you got to learn your guys a little bit, because every guy needs a little bit longer runway than others. Mm-hmm. And so some guys need a long 2, and some guys need, you know, a couple throws and they're ready to go, you know, and those kind of things. And so that's a 2. And then 3 is full intent off the mound, getting ready to go in the game. And so, you know, we have 1, 2s, and 3s, and that's helped me kind of, hold guys back as well. Cause a lot of times I say, hey, you know, go down and start getting ready. Like, they're going and getting hot right off the bat. And so, it allows me to kind of just hold them back a hair. I only want you at a 1 right now. You shouldn't be throwing, you know. And then, see the game unfold, or you know, hey, like, you were on my mind, but we just put up a 7 spot in the top half or something. Hey, let's just stay at a 1. I was going to get you to a 2, but now we don't need you to get to a 2 or whatever it may be. And so, and then you really can't overdo 1. You really can't overdo 2 unless you do it multiple times early in the game. Like, maybe I got somebody to do a 2 in the 3rd inning, and then got them back up in the 5th inning to a 2, and then back up in the 7th inning. That might disrupt what they're doing. But like, once they're doing like a full catch play, like, hey, it's just catch. You're just playing catch. And so, and then 3 is full intent, ready to go. Throwing off a mound, ready to go in the game. And then from there, I really try to, a lot of people say 1-to-1. I think that's too much. Like, 1 pitch in the bullpen for 1 pitch in the game. I limit it to more like 1 pitch per hitter. Cause I think once you're hot, every bullet you throw in the bullpen is probably 1 less you're going to throw in the game. At that point, if you're a reliever, you know, you usually come in there with high intent and ready to go. So for us, like I said, once you're hot, you're still getting your 8 on the mound. Don't forget that. So for us, yeah, we try to slow them down a little bit. Once you're hot, you wave your hat, I'm hot. Like, okay, chill out. Maybe just 1 pitch per hitter at the most. And then from there, you're still getting your 8 on the mound. And then let's go try to win a game.
I love that. So next question is, what are your standards and rules? And how do you, let's say that, you know, whatever, you can pick one that I broke. How would you make sure that I didn't do that again?
Yeah, I don't even have like a list or rules. Honestly, I have what we call leadership principles. And so it's just basically our belief system, things that we believe in. And so there's not like, now yeah, is there going to be discipline? For sure. Like, I mean, there's going to be some standards, and the discipline's different mm-hmm. for everybody. Everybody's got like a length of rope, and, you know, some guys use it up quicker than others. Right. And so, you know, if it's, you know, your first offense, so to speak, then, you know, the discipline might not be as hard. And I think that's okay. And it's different for every person. But yeah, as far as the rules, I don't have like a list of rules. I never have, you know, we want to live right and do things right. And so we have leadership principles, and our leadership principles, we have 7 of them, and, you know, and our guys know them and they believe in them. And we actually walk guys through in the recruiting process through our leadership principles, just to find out if they believe in the same stuff that we do. And if they do, then it might be a good fit. And if not, then that's okay. I'd rather have them know that now than, you know, like sitting in the dorms going, what the heck am I doing here? You know, in October or something. So our mm-hmm. 7 leadership principles are be on time, no excuses, protect the team, play hard, get better, put the team first, and control what you can control. So if we do those 7 things, we're going to have a great year. We just are. I mean, it's just, there's just, we're going to feel good about what we're doing. You know, as far as being on time, we want guys a year to start and accomplish their daily tasks, right? Like, we just want them to be jacked to be there and be respectful of everybody else's time. As far as no excuses, we want the leaders to kind of be owners, right? We don't want to sacrifice any of our long-term goals for short-term results. So, like, you know, we don't want to cut corners anywhere. Like, hey, if we got beat somewhere, it's just because we got beat. As far as protecting the team, you know, everything that you do, you're representing the rest of the team, no matter where it is, whether it's in the cafeteria, in the classroom, around the community. You know, you're representing Central Arizona everywhere you go. And so there's a responsibility there. As far as playing hard, you know, that's just a belief, right? Like I said, we want our guys to slide hard, tag hard, run hard. The score doesn't matter. The opponent shouldn't matter, whether we're in, you know, the national championship game or the fall game, they're all game 7. As far as get better, we want guys that intentionally put themselves in positions that make them uncomfortable, right? So, like, I stink at my backhand, like, I'm going to work on my backhand. I'm not just going to shade to the forehand side, so I always get shade to my backhand side, so I always get forehands or something like that. We don't want that. We just want to get better. So, like, don't be afraid to, like, you know, admit that, hey, I'm not good at something. Just get better at it. Get work at it. And so, put the team first. That one's, you know, we want leaders, to start with the team and work backwards. I think a big part of being a leader is developing other leaders. And so, putting the team first is important to us. And then, the last one is control what you can control. And that one I think your mind is your biggest weapon or your biggest weakness. And it usually isn't in the middle. It's one or the two. And so, mm-hmm. And so, you know, all those things that, you know, everybody talks about that you can or can't control is true. And so, and how you, you know, we try not to have a reaction to things. We try to have a response to them instead. You know, that usually helps us, those 7 things. So, like I said, we don't really have rules, just more leadership principles.
All right. And then the last one I've got for you, what's one thing that you've implemented in your program that you feel like has made the biggest impact?
Yeah. Ownership. Like I said, I mean, I think as a leader, I think, you know, when you first get put in that role, you want to, you know, be on top of everything and those kind of things. But I think delegation and ownership, to people that you trust and have trained is a big thing. So we have something in our program called, I don't mean to give you all these cliches, but they're important to our program, but, we have something called 2.85%. And what 2.85% is we have 31 players on our team and 4 coaches. So that's 35 people. And you divide that into 100, you get 2.85%. And so that's your worth to the team. And that's how much what your value is to the team. And so if everybody just brings their 2.85% every single day, it equals 100, right? And we're going to be operating at a super high level. But the minute somebody only brings, 2.5% and someone else is sick and they can only bring 1% and the other guy doesn't even show up, you can see how that we're not, as a team, we're not operating at 100% anymore. We're operating at maybe 80%, and we open up the doors to get beat by maybe a team we shouldn't get beat by, or maybe we don't get enough out of practice that day because, we're just not bringing it. And so it gives value to everybody, whether you're the head coach or the assistant coach or the star player or the bullpen catcher, we're all worth the same. And so those guys who maybe don't think they're worth 2.85% feel value. The Jalen Rays of the world who are struggling, right, and we're building up. And then the guys who think they're the stars, they don't have that big weight on their shoulder because, hey, I'm only worth 2.85%. I just got to bring that. And everybody else is bringing theirs, and now we're operating at a high level. So yeah, I think ownership and delegation, is a big thing that's really helped me as a coach and certainly helped our program.
Awesome. Well, Anthony, I appreciate your time. And is there any, first off, can you give us some contact information for anyone who wants to get in touch with you?
Yeah, my Twitter is if you guys follow on Twitter or anything, it's just at Anthony Gilich, just my name, AntonyGilich. My email is just anthony.gilich@centralaz.edu. Would love to touch base with anybody. Yeah, I mean, you reach out through email and from there, obviously, we can exchange contact phone information or anything like that. But yeah, if you want to follow me on Twitter or, I get a lot of content from there as well.
Awesome. Well, Anthony, I appreciate your time. Is there anything else that you'd like to tell our listeners before you go?
No, I appreciate you having me on. I think it's a cool deal what you do. And so I would encourage people to listen to your podcast. I think it's a cool deal with a variety of people on there, and I certainly listen to it and think it's a cool deal what you do and highlighting all different levels of baseball and just ability to learn. And so that's what I try to do every day, and it sounds like that's what you try to do every day. And so it's a cool fraternity, the baseball fraternity. So yeah, and I certainly appreciate you having me on.
Thank you so much for listening to Ahead of the Curve. If you would do us a huge favor, leave a rating or review wherever you are listening. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with someone and tag us on social media. That would help us so much with growing the show and helping others to stay ahead of the curve.